Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today we have two very special guests. Our guests are Charlene Marie Muhammad and Marilyn Pepper Citizen. And it was a little bit humbling to get to listen and speak with two very, very powerful women with so much clarity. I feel like in this interview, I would come in with a kind of a big question, and then they would whittle it down and refine it and get more and more clarity about each topic that we talked about. And so they have co-written a book called Yoga in the Black Community: Healing Practices and Principles, again by Muhammad and Pepper Citizen. And this is a really amazing book that I feel everyone should read. There are some very painful parts to reading about the history of the inequities in healthcare regarding the Black community and the racism that they experience. But on the flip side, there is also so much hope, and the toolbox of yoga can be used to take every single one of us from being a victim to being liberated in this life as an individual and as a community. There's so much hope in that message. And I think that Charlene and Marilyn, they want to acknowledge the harms that were done, but also sow seeds for the future. And I just really appreciated that focus in the end on joy, on hope, on having a dream where we can really come together and create more health equity out there for all communities. So this is a sobering episode, but also one that I think we all need to listen to, and one that hopefully will leave you feeling in the end like there is hope and some very practical steps on what we can do. We get into in the interview, what can you begin with? What can you do to help with this? So I love this episode. I hope you do too. And let's go in and meet Charlene and Marilyn. Season 9 of the Yoga Therapy Hour. Welcome. This year, many of you have volunteered to come forward and tell your stories. It has been one of the highlights of all the years we've been doing the Yoga Therapy Hour. I mean, we've had several hundred episodes over the last 3 years. We've had almost 200,000 people listening to these episodes. It's a big deal. So to come on and tell your story and be human and be imperfect, it's been wonderful to see so many people with humility and grace and generosity and kindness. So many people telling their stories because they don't want other people to suffer like they have. And there is a way forward. As we look through the lens of yoga therapy, Ayurveda, so many of us have found that healing, a different kind of healing than we found through other types of modalities. So as we move into season 9, I just want to thank everyone who signed up this year and also let you know that I can't take any more stories. It's been such an overwhelming response. I am completely booked. We are completely booked through the end of the year, which is a really great problem to have. And then in 2026, we're moving on to a totally different topic. We had a year of stories, and we'll go into something else in 2026. So thank you all so much for participating. There will be an opportunity for all of you to participate in 2026, but I'm going to do a big series on the eight limbs of yoga that's going to take us over a year. So if you volunteer to be on the podcast in 2026, I have very specific topics listed out that pertain to the eight limbs of yoga. And maybe you'll want to talk on one of those. All right, everyone, have a great day. Let's go hear our speaker for today tell their story. Welcome, Marilyn and Charlene. Thank you for being here today. And I just want our audience to know where you're joining us from.
Greetings, Amy. I'm Charlene Muhammad, and I am in Columbia, Maryland.
Thank you.
And hello from Northern Virginia. Washington, D.C. suburbs.
Wonderful. So, Marilyn and Charlene, I understand you've been friends for quite a while now. And I think you told me it took you about 4 years of time together, gentle conversations, and just kind of a sattvic way to approach writing this book together. Can you say a little bit about maybe what made you want to write this book?
Well, Charlene and I met actually at SITAR, International Association of Yoga Therapists conference, and we chatted then and recognized that we had some common interests. And so for probably a couple of years, that was where we connected. It was at that conference. We didn't see each other in between, but there was a conference that the NIH was holding about pain. And Charlene and I met there and had some discussions and recognized that we both felt that there were points that we wanted to make and highlight within the community, within the Black community, and that perhaps a good way to do that would be to put it in text so that others could see it. But yes, it took us a while to do that.
I love how you approached it, though. There's not like this big deadline and we don't have to rush. That it was, I think you all told me that it was just kind of like get together once or twice a month and have a nice conversation and then write a little bit. Is that true, Charlene, or is there more to it than that?
Certainly, I think when we left the conference, we had one idea, a bigger idea, really was focusing on chronic pain. What I recall from that particular, it's the 20th anniversary of the National Center on Complementary and Alternative Medicine, that there were all of these wonderful research studies on the use of integrative health and particularly yoga as a modality to support chronic pain. And the data that was available on who was suffering from chronic pain, all of those particular statistics showed that the African American community were faring the worst. And so we first started having this conversation about, we're yoga therapists, there's these wonderful tools that we have. How can we support our community? So in our monthly conversations, we started this incredible, I don't even say, because it wasn't a book proposal at first, but just sort of a thought, a place where we could just house all of the different thoughts that we had, as well as collecting a bunch of research. So we started a Google Docs and we started filling it with just our own individual research. And then any ideas that came up, putting them down. And over time, the conversation or the message that we wanted to have for the community started gelling in a different way.
And at that time, had you contacted like your publisher and said we might want to do this? Or were you seriously just putting it in the Google Docs and letting it emerge? And then when it came to some shape, then maybe you went and said, hey, is there a publisher out there that could help us with this? I'm just curious about your process.
I think after 4 years, we said, okay, what are we going to do with this? We're going to stir the pot and eat it or, throw it out, something like that. I'm putting this more facetiously than poop and get off the
We can say that on this podcast.
pot.
An
So,
adult
yes,
podcast.
we did some research to see what were like publishing companies that might be interested in publishing this. And we figured out how to write a book proposal, which we did. And the two publishing companies that we contacted both were interested. And then they were like, well, this is wonderful. This is a wonderful outline. Show us the sample chapter. And we were like, oop, oop, we got to get busy. So it gave us some incentive when we finished the book proposal and just got such a positive feedback that really gave us incentives. And we put all the deadlines on ourselves. So we were
Which
like,
is helpful
yes.
because life is lifing. Anything else you want to add, Marilyn, about your process?
Well, yes, as Charlie mentioned, the conversation emerged, and we realized that what we wanted to talk about was broader than pain. That pain was one perspective, but that it was much, much larger than that. And so we were challenged to how do we bring this to this text, this book that we're going to write, in a way that is truthful, and the truth was painful, but yet in a way that was hopeful. Like we met once a month, every month for 4 years. And yes, when the publisher said, you know, we'd like to see a sample, the light came on. Like, ah,
Nah,
we need to
we
be
actually have to write.
busy.
So, I'm sure I've said it in the intro, but the book we're talking about is Yoga in the Black Community. And is this for all of us, or is it mainly the audience for the Black community? Because I was reading it thinking we all need to know every single page of this book.
That was one of the questions that the publisher asked, you know, before they even accepted our idea, was who is the audience for this book? And from the very beginning, we were specifically first focused on Black yoga teacher trainees, but that the information in the book is for everyone and anyone, because anyone that one of us comes in contact with, there is richness in the book, we hope, that will kind of improve and feed us as we all go along this path. Because one point of the book that's not lost is that we are all in community, despite how portions of the community live life or have life lived in them.
Absolutely. And we all gain from understanding that lived experience. I want to tap right back into something else you said, that it started off as a book about basically the health inequity around Black people that are having pain. Number one, I thought you were going to say that there wasn't even research to show that, but it sounds like there actually is research out there to show that it's a disproportionate amount of people that are experiencing pain. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, and what the research is showing are a lot of racial biases around the experience of pain within African American communities. And these racial biases go back to the time of enslavement. Black people, they have thicker skin, they have a bigger pain tolerance, they don't feel pain the same way. So you have that on one sense. And then you have other documentation that shows that Black people will suffer silently in pain because of mistrust of the medical establishment and a lot of social services within our community. So all of that is out there and documented, and that's such a shame. Like, okay, so here we have people who are suffering because of a misunderstanding of racial bias and then a mistrust of the system. And yet, there are tools that can absolutely support them. And I did want to go back to just your point about who we wrote the book for. One of the responses that we're getting from a variety of different people who read the book, and I'm very happy to hear that this is what resonates with them, is that there is a universal message. Yoga is universal. If we take the time to look at all different types of communities, we can see that that universal thread is throughout, and it can absolutely be aligned and applied to all of our different communities because it is a universal practice. And every people have a way of striving to find comfort and to evolve themselves as human beings.
There was a chart maybe two-thirds of the way through the book that it had the eight limbs of yoga, but then it also had a Christian perspective and several other perspectives to kind of show not just the spirituality that's helping us all, but that every limb of yoga has common universal principles with several other world religions or philosophies.
Yes. Yeah. And indeed, I think that that chart has been resonating with a lot of folks, and then they can adapt it themselves, so they can use that just as a template to begin to approach communities that they're interested in working with, or even within their own communities.
As Marilyn had said, we must look at the painful parts and also have hope. I have to say, some of the chapters on the history of the health inequities, it's painful for us to look at that. And I think Jana Long also had a movie out a few years ago, similar, that, wow, we really need to see what has happened And at the same time, there's hope for the future, and that hope involves yoga.
Yes.
In line with that, even going back to the discussion about the research and what Charlene and I knew and understood, but in that particular setting, there were researchers talking about research that they were conducting at the time, and we weren't included. So there's this history of scientific bias. There's this issue of suffering and silence. An acknowledgement of that from our perspective, anyway, but yet the discussion didn't include it in any way. And I think that was what really prompted us to take action because there, this research is going forth and there's a voice that's not being included.
And I do remember asking a question about that to one of the researchers. And he saying very poignantly, that community doesn't trust us. And so, therefore, it's challenging for us to go in and invite them to do the research. So he acknowledged that there was a mistrust there. Not that I'm going to find a way to bridge
Say
that
on one hand, okay, that makes it more challenging, but all the more reason to figure out a way forward. And that's exactly what I was thinking, Marilyn. I know with almost all scientific research, it's done on middle to upper class white people who have Kaiser Permanente healthcare or something, like we're not well represented across all different ages and genders and races, and it really is not a good view of who's actually out there in the world, and it
Not a
matters.
good sample size.
Yeah,
Not at all.
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I acknowledge that organizations like the APA has submitted letters of acknowledgement for their part in the situation that we're in. As you both stated, it's, where do we go from here? How do we go from here? And what do we do? And what are some methods that might help us? And brings us back to our writing.
So another kind of theme in the book is that the Black community has kind of been historically excluded or even marginalized in the kind of mainstream yoga space. So how do you address that in your book? Or do you even agree with that?
Yes, for me, it's going back to, first of all, having a better understanding of culture. And so understanding what culture is. And if in the typical yoga space, I think cultural awareness of who's in the room, we talk about that as yoga therapists, we talk about that as yoga teachers, recognize who's in the room. But I don't know that that's quite as easily done as it is said. Well, no, I take a step back. If we don't know what our own personal biases are, how will we ever make others feel as though they belong? And so it goes back to the nature of what yoga is about a path to liberation. So before I can help and assist others on their path, I have to have been on my own. And so it's like doing a lot of personal work. And if that work hasn't been done, I don't know how we'll ever get to where we hope a yoga space will be.
And then also, what is a yoga space? In the Black community, community events happen all over. They're not in necessarily pretty yoga studios. There's yoga classes happening in churches. They're in community centers, in senior centers, in parks, in people's homes.
Schools.
And so it is the awareness that the practice is happening, and not necessarily in a pretty sanitized way, that also is at a price point that members of the Black community or many communities just can't afford to do it. You say, take yoga off the mat, take it out of the studio, and begin to offer these beautiful principles where people are at, then I think that that will broaden the embrace of this beautiful practice.
Part of it too is recognizing that you don't need to be in a place to practice yoga. It's how you wake up in the morning, it's how you go through the day, it's how you deal with whatever you're bombarded with throughout the day, it's how you go to bed at night. And I think that that is a challenge as well. We speak yoga, and as Charlene said, it's on a mat in a specific place. And in the Black community, that's not what is the typical way to practice.
I love this idea of people getting together in homes with people they trust and belong with. And that's a very heartwarming thought to have that kind of safety. Please take a moment with me to go and listen to something a little different, and then we'll get right back to the guest. Many times, as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, or even moms, dads, grandparents, we wonder what's happening with our loved one in between the times we're seeing them. Whether your child went off to college or whether you're a yoga therapist who only sees your client once a month, you might wonder, how are they doing? Well, here at the Optimal State, we have developed a mobile app where people can track how they're feeling mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually at different times of day, seasons of the year. And basically, you can see the data. You can see how your 6 to 10 a.m. slot in your day looks and how you usually feel at that time versus your 2 to 6 p.m. How do you feel at that time of the day? And you can see the patterns. You can set a week, a month, a season, and get the aggregate data so you can see what your pattern is. Where do you tend to go out of balance? And the cool thing is you can just take a screenshot of that summary and send it off to your yoga teacher, your yoga therapist, your parent, your child. It's a really great way to check in. And I think especially for maybe kids that don't want to call their parents all the time from school, they could just show their parent the data, like, okay, I'm doing all right. Here, look at my data for the last 2 weeks. Screenshot. Boom, it's yours. Now you can settle down and stop calling me. It could be that, or it could be that your child is not doing well, but they don't know how to say that to you, or maybe your client. And so your client could take a screenshot of their data from the last week and send it to you as they come into the session, so you kind of have an idea of what's going on with them. So there's many ways to use it. And in addition, there are wonderful interventions that help people to come into balance. So I hope you'll consider checking out on the App Store. It's called Optimal State App. You just type that in, Optimal State App, and check it out. It's free for the first few weeks, so you have nothing to lose from trying it out and checking out how to track, how to get your aggregate data, how to send that off, and then hopefully how to get some interventions. All right, now let's go back to our guest. It brings me to my next question, which is, what is the importance of community-based healing? I mean, some forms of yoga have been kind of known as almost like individualistic liberation, right? If we follow some of the ancient texts, but can you say a little bit more about the community healing that can happen through yoga?
When I was thinking about this question, I take it on twofold. One, I think that right now, globally, we all collectively are suffering from some serious trauma. And so to be able to acknowledge that on that larger scale, that the vibration is very traumatic right now. What I also appreciate, I'm going to say, with young people, younger people than myself, is that they're finding language to name what is exactly happening. They might not have the answer, but at least finding the way to name this of what's going on. And I think that that's the first step. So once we begin to collectively realize where we're at as far as this collective trauma, we can begin to support one another in the way that we start community healing. I also know that the Black community, the sense of family, elders, ancestors, community, is rooted within us, within our culture itself. And so individualization, yes, we can see that because we have an individual responsibility towards our healing. However, that individual responsibility towards our healing is so that the community itself can then heal. So it is a two-part portion of the way we work within our community itself. And community-based healing, there's an atonement process that happens within that, right? So we can acknowledge that there's been some grief. And once this general acknowledgement happens, we could then begin to find the steps to atone for the actions of what have happened and then move towards some kind of healing.
I would also add that the need for an atonement or to talk about wrongdoing, pain, and harm. It is something that never stops. There has been no end to it. It is consistent. It's every day. It doesn't matter what community you're from. So even as I talk about Black community, it's also very much acknowledging that there is a lot of difference between Black communities. But there is a consistent thread, whether it's a community that's underserved or affluent. And that is the racial discrimination and wrongdoing and harm that's faced every day, despite what your community is. And to be in a place where you can see someone and you know, like it's not like we have to explain it to each other. We know, we understand. There's even some healing in just being in a place where for 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes, you can literally just be there and not have to be prepared to respond, protect, or whatever it is that you have to do to get through the day.
Or explain it or educate others. I hear that. I can't even take a deep breath to think of that and that knowing. I can't remember who said it, but the strength that has been required to keep moving forward in spite of that reality has created such a strong spirit in the Black community. Would you all agree with that?
Yes, and there's also a deep wound. And the wound is such that although there's a archetype of survival, there's also one of victim. And so that victim can keep us from evolving, being resilient, growing, dreaming, hoping.
Even that resilience too has a barrier to it. Even to just be in a place where you know that you can work your way through whatever it is that you are affronted with, that's still a barrier to being able to just be fully who the person is. And even to a point where that constant resilience in itself takes a toll.
Especially when the atonement and the structural changes. I mean, it'd be one thing if we could see that happening, then there's somewhat of a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of people getting this and moving it in a new direction. But when we see things like what's happening right now, we're going in the opposite direction. To keep saying, have resilience, be hopeful. Like, I can imagine that's just not even healthy.
Right. It's
And
not.
it's not. And from a yogic perspective, it is like, I was going to say a constant reminder, but I would say that for some, it's new. To imagine yourself as whole, always as whole, despite there being messages that you're not, that you're less than or different or other.
True inequity
Yes.
messages and true inequity. Not to interrupt you, Marilyn. I'm sorry. Charlene, any other thoughts around that?
Trauma is, unfortunately, it's not normal. I'm actually reading Gabor Mate's recent book, The Myth of Normal. And he defines it so well. We've actually come to a point in our society where we've accepted trauma as a normal way of being. And that is absolutely causing all of the illnesses that we're having. They're compounding, and particularly around our emotional and mental health at this point. So, all the more reason for yoga therapists to dig a little deeper into our own work. And the only way that we can be effective in offering yoga therapy is if we're practicing it within our own selves and really peeling back those layers, because we're all affected by this. No one is really walking around in a bubble, looking outside, going, oh, let me go help these people because they look like they're traumatized or hurt or in pain over there, when we know that it's affecting us all. So this is not normal, and we have to acknowledge that.
And I know I didn't put this on the question list, but We can acknowledge it's not normal, and that is our first step. And then what? I have this urge to then follow through with action. Like, okay.
We have the action since we're talking from a yogic perspective. We begin to implement a practical application of our yoga philosophy. We have the answers. These are the tools that are here. And truly having that experience, not only within yourself, but you can start small. You start within your scope of work, your scope of being. So it starts with how are you interacting with the people that you live with, people that you work with, the people you're in community with. We have the tools. And so we see it come into place when there is a major disaster. So they just had this major flood disaster. And listening to the reports, when they go out and speak to survivors or first responders, there's an acknowledgement of my life was spared and I'm grateful for that. We come together as community to support one another. So if we can do it in those instances, the only way we can begin to evolve out of this is to continue to do it as a daily practice. And we have the tools.
And sometimes before we can use the tools, we have to do that first step that Charlene just mentioned, and it is looking within first. You know, sometimes when we talk about wanting to take action to help, it's external. What can I do to help that person? Where am I moving in the world? How have my perceptions been shaped by my lived experience? Starting with self first and then being able to move forward. But to be able to ask those questions about what is it about my own perceptions.
It's so ironic because when you realize what has happened and how we've contributed and let it continue to happen, there's naturally a shame that kind of comes over and you feel activated to do something. But to say, no, let's go inward and really look at our own perspectives and biases and the ways that we move in the world, you know, that's much harder than trying to go outside and do some action, I think. So, where does this lead us with respect to yoga therapy education and credentialing? And do our organizations like IAYT and Yoga Alliance, do they have some responsibility to require all of us to learn what's in your book? Or is that taking it too far? Maybe I shouldn't mention names, but it seems like there's the individual work, but then there's also the organizational work. What do y'all think?
That's the next book.
I want to give both of those organizations you mentioned, IAYT and Yoga Alliance, some credit because they have begun to open up conversation and dialogue around cultural competency, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. And that's the beginning, you know, and those are not easy conversations because we all have our own lived experience and perceptions about how that should take shape. And so, from an organizational perspective, that's a heavy lift because you're basically speaking on behalf of whether it's a membership or your organization. And so, it's going to be a lot of different conversations that happen. However, very necessary that you begin to have those conversations and hard conversations. I think that there are cultural competencies now. There is a lot of talk about bias competencies and whatnot in both organizations. So they're within the tenets of what they're saying. We can drill down a little deeper about who's offering those kinds of work and the level of expertise or lived experience to be able to offer. Like what I say, it's not just a ornament on the Christmas tree that is said, you get to check the box that you've had this kind of training. You know, if you're going to change a culture, then you have to really begin to incorporate a way of life, so to speak, within the culture or within the organization that changes that itself. And I think for yoga therapy, when we're doing the sciences of anatomy, physiology, and pathophysiology, it has to be in those conversations as well. It's just like you said earlier, Amy, if all the research are done on middle-class Caucasian men, then that's not relative to who I'm serving in my yoga therapy practice. Right. So we have to then begin to offer the different genres and nuances of anatomy, physiology, pathophysiology that's happening so that we can serve a broader base of clients.
And looking at a systemic structure, I don't think we can depend on an organization to do this for us. But an organization is comprised of individuals. And so we can look at this from a microcosmic perspective where IAYT, Yoga Alliance, other yoga organizations are a microcosm of what it means to be part of a greater system. So these systems are made up of individuals. So if the individuals themselves aren't doing this same work, then you can have all the systems that you want and still not be able to solve the problem, which we see today. So it has to be both. It has to be at the individual level. The people who are involved in these organizations have to be doing this work themselves and be able to ask the hard questions of themselves. And then in turn, be able to, how do we find a way to work toward this in the most positive way? Because I think that it is not realistic to assume that any organization is going to have all the answers. I just don't know if in history where we've seen that any place. And so it's even being a little bit more realistic, being open and understanding that it is a continuing problem, continuing issues that we continue to have to work toward. But as Charlene mentioned, the fact that both of these organizations have taken some efforts, like it's a start, and there's still much to be done. But I don't think we can give up on them either, because it's not an either or from my perspective, it's both. What do we do individually? What can we do systemically and as organizations? And then the education part, you know, that's part of it as well.
Let's follow up on the education. I really love what you're saying. And I think we've all seen instances where an organization, the individuals that are in there are really committed and we see some progress. And then maybe they get burnt out or they leave or new people come in. And then all of a sudden it gets kind of dropped and forgotten. So I love that idea that it's going to be ongoing from here on out. Is there anything else you wanted to say, Marilyn or Charlene, about the education piece?
Too expensive.
Well, it's expensive. Well, it's sort of like being a yoga therapist or a yoga teacher. You want to be able to offer the practice to those who can't afford it, but you also have bills that you have to pay. Reality, being human in the society we live in is messy. And so from an education perspective, like the same as a business perspective, how do you find a way to meet the needs and perhaps those that can do so that those who can't are able to? I think that sometimes it's really hard to have difficult discussions in an educational setting. To be constantly looking outward and not looking inward, to me, is like bypassing the glaciers, going straight to the yamas, and everything is great. And so how do we build environments where students and educators and trainers and teachers are in a place where the difficult conversations can happen so that there can be growth on the other side? So I think I asked the question versus answered a question.
All good things end with another question. Charlene, do you want to jump in here or do you feel complete with that?
Yeah, I'll just say ditto at this point. I mean, I think I do. I agree. I know that particularly for yoga teacher training and yoga therapist training, these are small organizations and businesses in and of themselves that are doing great work. However, I also know that we could blossom more when we can find a way to make this a much more affordable experience for folks. You know, most yoga teachers who come in, if they're a young yoga teacher, they come in with, I want to say, Pollyanna understanding about how they're going to live off of this experience of yoga. And so, you know, then they're in the quandary. This become a more commercialized aspect of yoga, which we are battling against. So when does it become cultural appropriation that's happening in order for me to sustain myself? We still have those kind of conversations that we need to sort of tease out and work out within the community of yoga itself.
I have been having this discussion with a few leaders in the field that, like, we're half in the capitalistic realm and half in the kind of nonprofit realm. Let's just walk over into the nonprofit realm. Why are we having conferences at big fancy hotels? Why aren't we having them on college campuses? Why aren't we like stepping into our power where we're not going to be controlled by the finances, and aligning with organizations and universities or hospitals that want what we want and want to support us and want to bring us and give us space to do this good work. So I'm out there talking to different leaders in the field right now saying, we need a complete culture change here. Let's get rid of all this fancy hotels and let's come back to the roots of what is our goal, what is our function, and how can we achieve that in a nonprofit way? There's plenty of grants out there. There's so many resources we could tap into. All right, so switching gears a little bit, one of my questions for you was how do you incorporate ritual storytelling and cultural practices alongside the yogic tools in your sessions or classes? I feel like that was a whole different energy I'm bringing in, but we have to come to a place of hope by the end of this interview that there is a way forward.
Well, for myself, in my yoga therapy practice, during my initial intake, I inquire as to if the client has a spiritual or wellness practice. And then once I've established what that is, then I invite that as a part of our experience together. And then over time, I strive to align that with yoga philosophy so that the experience of yoga, the dialogue and the language of yoga becomes theirs as they're coming into their practice. In my yoga classes, I will begin with offering an intention for the class itself, usually around an aspect of the yoga philosophy. Whether I say it's yoga philosophy or not, I'll offer it in that way. And then ask the students to also set their intention under the guise of the golden rule. Whatever you're intending for yourself, you're intending for each of us that are in the room, so that brings some camaraderie within the students themselves as they're coming into their practice. And then we come full circle after Shavasana with those reminders about what was our intention to be together in this practice.
I just have a quick question before we go to Marilyn on this. When you were saying that what is for one of us is for all of us in that yoga space, what a beautiful intention to bring out into the world. What is for
That's
one of us?
namaste, yes.
Yes, yeah.
That's namaste. It's assalamu alaikum. It's peace. I mean, those are the greetings that we have for one another. If we truly understand why we're making those intentions, why am I namaste to you? So that is bowing to the light that I see within you, which is a reflection of myself. So I'm constantly striving to have folks slow down and to find a way that they can be together, quietly, just within a circle that you're recognizing that. That's another two-legged sit next to you.
Or four-legged.
Or
Let's not
four-legged.
exclude
That's right, that's right, that's right. And they come to
sentient
my
beings. Marilyn, do you want to say anything about ritual or storytelling or cultural practices alongside yoga tools?
Yes. And I think when you work and practice in community, you already have a base to start from. And the beauty of yoga therapy is that I get to better understand what community is for the individual. And that guides my actions after that. It guides the conversation, guides the practice, it guides how I approach practices. And in a class, again, I go back to being in community. Within the Black community, we have a culture that is equivalent to the practices of yoga, to the philosophy of yoga. And that is not different. It's not that different. You mentioned the YouTube video that Jana did about the uncommon yogi, which points out that we have a practice. You know, our community, you go back to before we were brought to this country, we had that. And so it's like, how do you tap into what is already innately part of you? And that there is a link there between how we see life and this in-depth understanding that we are whole. We are more than what we see. We are more than what people tell us that we are. There is joy in the world. That is a practice of yoga. So for me, it's being able to help people to realize that they already know some things that they might not realize that they know.
Isn't that a beautiful thing to watch unfold when you encourage them to remember, oh, yeah, I am that? It's a beautiful thing to watch someone have that realization about themselves. So, one last thing from each of you, is there something, a takeaway that you'd like people to have when they read your book, Yoga and the Black Community? Is there a takeaway each one of you would like them to receive from this book?
From a couple of perspectives, I would say for someone within the Black community to recognize that they are whole, beautiful individuals despite what's going on in the world, and to hold on to that and know that there is much more than what we see before us. To, I would say, for everyone to understand that yoga is so much more than what it's boiled down to be here in the West. And so a desire to see it for the breadth of the philosophy, for what it is. And yeah, liberation, moksha, that.
Yes, that and that in order to understand the trauma of another, you need to take some time to know their history. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to define succinctly what it meant to be an enslaved person in the United States of America and how through that all, there was some spiritual universal principles that were carried with us, and that is yoga. So, if you want to work with any community, you must know their history. And that way, your own sense of perceptions can shift somewhat.
Just one more thing, though, to not see us as a broken people either. Those poor people, no, as whole humans with pride, with joy,
With hope.
and with daily challenges that are presented for us, you know, that we cannot avoid.
Can we hold both the empathy and the compassion and the hope and the wonder?
We're more alike than different.
Yes.
Well, thank you both for writing the book, for doing the 4 years of research and the Google Docs, and for really mapping out the history so that those of us who don't know that history actually can find it in one place. I'm sure that was a lot of emotional labor to pull all of that together and then write about it. And I just want you to know that we're grateful and then to bring it to the publisher and get it out there. So I hope that it will become part of every teacher training, every yoga therapy training. So important.
We are grateful, if I can speak for you, Marilyn, of the reception that we've received from it. It was overwhelming at first, as well received as it has been from many different communities, and even in with folks who are not yogis, you know, finding that it is of use.
Very grateful for that.
Well, thank you both for being here today.
And thank you. Thank
Thank
you
you for
for having
having
me.
us.
Yes,
Yes.
thank you. Namaste.
Namaste. As we close out this episode of the Yoga Therapy Hour, I want to give a little bit of thanks to Charlene and to Marilyn, and I want to show you where you can reach them if you'd like to start working with them. Or another person I want to give a shout out to is BYTA, which is the Black Yoga Teachers Association. They have a beautiful website, blackyogateachersalliance.org, excuse me. And basically, you can come in here and do books and brunch. You can do joining the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance. You can look at a beautiful short film by Jana that we talked about on the podcast called The Uncommon Yogi. And again, it has some really tough history in here. We do want to give a little bit of a warning because it comes up and surprises you to realize what has really happened and that it is the time for us to reflect on all of this. But I highly recommend that you look at The Uncommon Yogi, the history of Blacks and yoga in the US. And then you can always be a sponsor for the Black Yoga Teachers Alliance. So there's that. And they have something coming up. They've had it several times called Yoga as a Peace Practice. And this is something that they do every year. The dates for this year are not up quite yet on the site, but I do want you to come back and very soon they'll have Yoga as a Peace Practice ready so that we can learn more about it for this year. And then if you want to contact Charlene, you can go to urbanherbal.com, urbanherbal.com. And she is an herbalist in addition to being a yoga person, and her website is full of so much goodness. And then you could also go to Marilyn's website, which is the Dimensions of Wellness. And so Marilyn has her story in here, her journey of health and wellness over this entire lifetime. And many of you don't know this, but Marilyn was in the Air Force for many, many years before she became a yoga therapist. And probably you know she's the only ranked professor at the Maryland University of Integrative Health in the Department of Yoga Therapy. We're so grateful to have Marilyn as our sole ranked professor at the university. She does such great work. She teaches a lot of our science classes. So thank you, Marilyn, for all that you're doing in the world and for the field of yoga therapy. And let's close out this episode. It's been a great one, and we'll see you next week. Thank you to all.
Thank you to our guests this week, and thank you to all of you who are listeners of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm not sure if you know, but I've had a life change in the last year. I'm now the chair of yoga therapy and Ayurveda at Maryland University of Integrative Health. We are having some changes there. In the fall of 2025, we expect that a full merger will have happened with Notre Dame of Maryland University, and we will become a graduate school at Notre Dame of Maryland University. We're going to be called the School of Integrative Health. If you're interested in a master's degree in yoga therapy, we'd love to talk to you. Or if you're interested in a post-master's certificate, meaning you have a master's in some other area, but you would like to now come and study therapeutic yoga, we would also love to have a chance to show you our program. We also have certificate programs in Ayurveda. So if you're interested, just come to www.theoptimalstate.com and find me, or you can look us up at Notre Dame of Maryland University. Until the merger happens, we'll still be over at www.muih.edu. Thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.